Joining us out front and center, as he always does, is the Executive Communications Director for the Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut, Howard Schwartz. Howard, as always, welcome to Front and Center.
Thanks so much, John. I appreciate it.
And a number of interesting things to talk about today, beginning with this new BBB study that reveals stereotypes of victims of fraud are wrong. What's going on here?
Well, let's put it this way. We have some notions that, for example, seniors are at greatest risk of being defrauded. However, according to this new research called Cracking the Invulnerability Illusion, that stereotype could actually not be further from reality. We have this mistaken belief that typical fraud victims are vulnerable or elderly or gullible or poorly educated. But the survey paints quite a different picture. Those at high at risk of being scammed, believe it or not, are young and educated millennials. But the point here, I think the most important salient part is, in fact, none of us is invulnerable. We are all at risk of becoming victims of fraud. And I think that's part of what the study was trying to say when it interviewed the 2,000 respondents. And it's a notion, it's a concept called optimism bias. And that's the belief that we think other people are more vulnerable than we are. We often see this in young children, starting with cigarette smoking, for example, but, you know, car accidents and that type of thing. It'll happen to other people, not to me. Well, that's not the case. That belief actually works to the advantage of the criminals because that optimism bias is associated with risk-taking and failure to heed precautionary advice. And again, that fits into that general category of between, let's say, 25 and 35. Now, what we're finding is that consumers, according to this study, 65 and older may actually be the most fraud savvy of all the groups because they do not believe they're invulnerable and they understand they're at risk. So seniors are also less impulsive buyers than younger consumers, and they're also less likely to conduct commerce over the internet where we know so many scams are taking place. And it also confirms what we find in BBB Scam Tracker. That's our crowdsourced scam reporting tool that you can find on our website. More than 30,000 consumers have reported details of scams to us since the site was launched in 2015. And the reports, if you want to report one, we don't use any personal information, but law enforcement takes a look at these numbers to try and track down the perpetrators. So the final numbers that come out of this are consumers reporting scams through Scam Tracker show us that 89% of seniors recognized a scam in time and only 11% actually lost money. However, for those aged 18 to 24, more than three times as many failed to recognize a scam, and 34% reported losing money as opposed to 11% for seniors. So armed with this information, let's move forward. And the best tools are education, like we're discussing right now, and understanding how the scams work. I did want to share one thing that I thought was really fascinating in this story, and that's altruism, if you will. We asked the question, what would be your primary motivation for reporting a scam? Now, the smallest section of respondents said 23% say they would report a scam to get their money back. A little higher, at 28%, we have people who said they'd report a scam because they want to bring justice to the perpetrator. However, the majority, 49%, say they will their motivation for reporting a scam is to help warn others about the scam. 49%. And that's really, that's a heart-lifting thing to hear. And it's all the more reason why when we have discussions like this with you and me, it's so important to discuss this with family, with friends, colleagues, and neighbors. So I think we've got to give up that notion about who's most valuable, who's most vulnerable, and maybe take a look inwards and find out whether or not we are aware of all the scams and how they work.
Now, I have to say this, Howard, because I'm always diligent. A lot of it, by the way, has to do with the conversations we've had about these scams. But I happened to get an email today, believe it or not, marked American Express and information about your American Express card. The problem is, I don't have an American Express card, so I deleted the email.
Right. And that's what you've got to do. Dan, I receive five to 20 fake emails a week. Well, the emails are real, but they'll tell me things, for example, that my there's a problem with my mortgage, and they'll give me a link to click. And of course, it did not come from the mortgage company, because like you say, it wasn't the company that we use. And it's always really to get us to click on one of those nasty links that will either download a virus into our software, into our computers, or else take us somewhere where they will start digging into our computer and give us a virus. So we've got to be very careful with those emails. Just remind folks once again that no government department or financial institution or other professional will ever initiate a series of phone calls requiring personal information.
So again, the way they usually communicate is through the mail, right?
Through email, but we're also finding, and I heard from the United States Postal Inspection Service, that the mail is actually being used now for more scams. And probably one of the reasons is we are smartening up. This might be a good indication that folks realize that demanding certain types of payment in a phone call is just not really cutting it like it used to. Getting a letter seems to have more authenticity. It's the old thing that I want a paper in my hands, and well, if I see it on paper, it's got to be true.
Unbelievable. It's amazing how diligent we have to be, but it's a never-ending process, Howard.
It isn't. And I think that if we understand and think about it, there really are only three vectors through which we get scammed. One of them is our telephone. I would say the vast majority of scams that I hear about are people who had someone call them and threaten them or offer them a free prize or those types of things. And we tell people, don't do business over the phone. If somebody calls you, don't give to charity that way or to a political party. And then the front door. You've got the choice as a consumer, even though we're from a generation where you don't slam the door shut on somebody. It's your property. And if someone's calling to try and push you with some high pressure tactics to whether it's changing your alarm monitoring system or to sign up for some sort of service, well, front door is not the best place. Ask for information. Thank you very much. And then do your research if it's you're so inclined. And finally, the internet. We know, don't open an email from someone you don't know. And when you're clicking online, try and stick to reputable sites. Even though we're all looking for that best price, you can inadvertently be taken to a site that you don't know and end up losing money. So internet, telephone, front door.
Speaking of phones, and of course, everybody, it seems, has a smartphone in this day and age. Landlines are suffering because of that. But that said, people are buying smartphones on a daily basis. What should they know when they buy a smartphone?
Well, if they're buying a smartphone itself, they should do their research. The model has changed. It used to be take a contract for 2 years, and the supplier, the carrier, would subsidize the cost of a phone. Well, that's not really the case anymore. They don't want to do that, and consumers are hence holding on to their phones longer and are opting to buy used smartphones. And that's where it can be potentially a problem. When older phones break down or their batteries don't hold a charge anymore, people look for a used device. And in some cases, rather than shelling out hundreds of dollars for the latest model, and there'll always be devotees who want the newest models as they come off the production line. And that's why there are so many used smartphones on the market. Here are the potential problems you can have. There's a chance the phone was stolen or rendered useless because it's locked to the carrier that originally sold it. And we know that people are selling these stolen phones on the internet. If the phone is locked, it would prevent you from selecting an alternative, less expensive wireless provider of your choice. Most of the problems with used smartphones happen after private sales. Now, if you buy from a friend and the phone's warranty is expired, yes, it'll strain your relationship if there's a problem. But if you purchase a smartphone from a classified ad, this is a person-to-person transaction. And unless you're paying with a credit card, which usually doesn't happen if you're dealing with a classified ad sale, then you don't have any of the protection. Sellers will usually specify on auction sites whether or not a phone was unlocked by its original carrier. And you also want to make sure that they unlock the phones with their own passwords, because if it's, for example, an iPhone, whether you try to restore that phone or do anything else, you need the actual information from the seller to be able to do that, or you're going to end up with a very expensive paperweight on your desk. Here's what we recommend, and I'm going to encourage you folks to grab a paper and a pencil to learn how to check if a smartphone is stolen. Obviously, evaluate the seller. That's difficult to do in a private sale, but you can do so from a local business, and that includes the smartphone repair kiosks. And even though your phone is not working properly, they will still buy the phone and give you a pretty good price because they use the parts, and those are quite expensive. Now, to check if it was stolen before you buy, we'll give you the website. You want the seller to provide you with what's called the mobile phone's IMEI number. And that's essentially the device's unique identifier or serial number. And you also want the seller to take a photo or a screenshot of the phone's IMEI to make sure that it does actually go with the phone they're selling you. If you want to check the phone's history, if you want to make sure it's not on a blacklist because it's reported stolen or missing, go to www.imei.info. That's I-M, like Michael, E-I, .info. And you can get all sorts of interesting information. When you're buying a phone, you can't see under its hood to see what's going on, but you can check the device's battery life. See if the camera works. Check the Wi-Fi connection. Make sure that the entire screen works properly and that the headphone jack, power, and volume switches are in good working order. You can ask for an original receipt of sale from the person if they have it. If they don't, get some sort of receipt that they sold it to you and ask them if you can take the phone for a couple of days and see if it works, because sometimes you have intermittent problems that might only pop up after using the phone for a little while. And essentially, if you're buying a smartphone, you can get as old a model as you want. You can get some of the newer ones, and obviously the more coveted ones will be more expensive. But just remember, it could be stolen, and it could be a phone with some sort of a problem. So protect yourself when you're doing that, and save a whole bunch of money.
Now, let me ask you this. How do we know that used phone isn't tracking the individual who buys it?
That's a very good question. You don't know that. So ultimately, when you're buying a smartphone, you would hope that the seller has wiped it clean entirely. Failing that, if you can open the phone, if they haven't locked it, if they've given you all the passwords, reset it to factory settings. Everything will be wiped from the phone, including malware, as well as their contacts and photos. And that can give you a good degree of feeling safe.
That was going to be my next question. Let's say an individual wants to sell a phone or goes to one of these mall kiosks to sell a phone. Is that what they need to do in order to wipe it clean before they put it up for sale?
Anytime you sell a piece of electronic equipment with personal information, you've got to wipe it free. Same with a computer, same with a fax machine, believe it or not, and a printer, because they actually save information that is going to print out or scan inside. So even if you're selling the phone for parts, wipe it absolutely clean. It's very easy to do a factory reset, easier than a computer. And on that same note, if you are selling a computer or even just getting rid of it, we recommend, it depends how you want to do it, but taking out the hard drive and smashing it or drilling a hole in it so that nobody will have access to your personal information. We had a party doing that, breaking a computer that hadn't worked in 10 years and smashed it up so no one could get access to our information. And boy, did that feel good.
And it's actually pretty easy to do, opening up the computer and taking the hard drive out.
Exactly. You can't do that with a smartphone, but they make it a lot easier to protect yourself. Very much.
Talking with Howard Schwartz from BBB here on Front and Center, I'm Dan Lavallo. And Howard, everybody's always looking for a discount, whether it's for outdoors or in the home. What should they know? How can they get some discounts without getting involved, let's say, in extreme couponing?
Well, that's a good question. Coupons are still valuable, and I'll give you an example. I was at the pharmacy last week, and the woman in front of me at the cash register said she had just purchased $70 worth of merchandise for a little over $35, and that shows the power of coupons and signing up for store-specific deals. But there are also websites that are devoted to finding the best deals for you and sign up for an alert, whether it's daily, weekly, or monthly. And just remember to assume that any personal information you're giving out, including your phone number, email, and address, will be shared with a third party. Now, the kind of merchandise that they sell on these sites, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Everything. Coupons and reward sites will find specials on groceries, toiletries, electronics, cookware, movie rentals, pharmacy purchases, lamps, florists, the whole thing. And in fact, I saw one offer of 76% off some of the items I just mentioned above. And these sorts of discounts and items are impressive, but you won't know about them unless you know where to go. And you don't, you're right, you don't have to be an extreme couponer to get these discounts. Coupons typically have an expiration date, and they offer more modest discounts, perhaps a dollar off of a grocery item or 15% discount at a major retailer. So, how can we find these deals? Check stores' websites, and they also have information on price specials. You can visit their social media sites where they'll tell you that there's a special and maybe give you a code to put in if you're buying online. You can sign up for emailed alerts from your favorite store. Comparison shop using search engines. Find out what other people are selling it for. And as well, check classified ads. And the coupon sites have really evolved over the years. An interesting model, for example, is a coupon site might have a deal where $20 worth of food for $10 you prepay in advance. Let me take a step back there. When I say coupon sites, those are the ones we know well, such as Groupon. And you'll find a $20 coupon for $10 worth of food, and you pay in advance, but then you've got this inexpensive meal, and it's a wonderful way to save money. And you can even find lists of websites that give you lists of other discount websites. It's an aggregator. It sniffs the internet for these types of things. And one of the most popular trends allows consumers to compare items and find their prices by scanning the barcodes for merchandise tags in the stores. And 2 in 3 shoppers now say that they're using computer tablets to make purchases this particular season.
When we provide these websites with our information, what do we need to know? In other words, what kind of information should we be supplying them?
At the most, you want to give them the least amount that's necessary.
Right.
For example, I have a second email account that I use for business, for signing up for things, and my primary is used just for family and friends. With regards to your telephone number, I avoid that. I just don't want anyone else having that phone number, especially since I don't have a landline anymore. So I'll just decline to do that. If they want to reach me, they can do it by email. And if anyone asks you for more than that, I would sort of back away. I know that pharmacy cards or store discount cards usually don't ask that much. But again, remember, your telephone number can be sold. So can your address and different information. It may be worth it to you. You may not really mind those types of things, but just keep in mind if you start getting mail that you a great deal of junk mail that you weren't expecting, that could very well be why.
That's it. Right.
Incidentally, Dan, one of the tricks I use is I change my middle initial, and that will tell me who sold the information, and it gives me an indication as to who I should probably not do business with next time or get in touch with them and tell them to do something about it.
So say that again. You'll change your middle initial?
That's correct. If I have to sign up, for example, for a pharmacy card, I might put Howard G. Schwartz. Or if I want to sign up for a grocery store card, I might put Howard A. Schwartz, Howard Z. Schwartz. And that way, when you start getting email with those unusual middle names, you'll know exactly who sold your information.
Very interesting. And what can you do to stop that so that you don't get that information?
give as little as possible. I would say give that email address. And if they say, well, we need your phone number to tell you about A, B, C, and D specials, you can just decline that request. The same way as if you're asked for your Social Security number. I know at the doctors and dentists, they ask me for that. And if I've already been there and given my insurance information, I simply will leave the space blank. And they don't squawk about it. I don't get a problem with that.
Right. But, you know, again, just going back, if you cross that threshold and you end up starting getting a lot of this junk mail and all that other stuff, what steps can you take to stop that?
Number one, throw the stuff in the garbage. You can also go to the direct mail marketing website, and Dan, I'm going to have to give that to you in a moment because I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry.
Well, while you do that, let me just duck in that email address or that website on the mobile phones, because I know, and I marked it down, I know that people are going to be wondering, what was that website to check whether the smartphones are legit? And that website is www.imei.info. That's www.imei.info.
That's correct. And if you want to opt out of people call it junk mail or unwanted marketing email, there's a website called dmachoice.org. DMA is a direct marketing association, so that's dmachoice.org. And that way you can sign up and the legitimate marketers will stop sending you these sorts of things. And again, once you figured out who's used your middle initial or who's sending you that stuff, you can speak to them directly and ask them to do what they can to get this stopped. But let's be honest, often they just sell it to a list and that's the end of it. So unfortunately, that's why I'm saying it's a lot easier to prevent than to fix these sorts of things.
And we also, of course, see it on emails, and we start getting a lot of those junk emails too, depending on what we sign up for, even on legitimate websites, right?
That's correct. And that's why I opened up that second email account exactly for these types of things. And that way I don't have to worry about family or friends' emails getting mixed in with the unwanted ones.
Howard, before we wrap up our interview, anything else you'd like to add?
I'd like to add, stay cool, enjoy the weather, and if you have a business or a charity that you want to look up to find out if they're legitimate, or if you want to find one that is Better Business Bureau accredited, you can come to our website at bbb.org/Connecticut, with Connecticut spelled out, and we can help you 24/7 at 860-740-4500, and we are always happy to help out.
Howard Schwartz from the Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut has been our guest on Front and Center. As always, Howard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dan. Take care.